Hi friends, welcome to the Mama.Wife Life podcast. I'm your hostess Brittany, and each week we'll be gabbing, bragging, and unpacking about life. So grab yourself a drink, get yourself comfortable, and get ready to be inspired. Hi everybody, thank you for tuning in. So today's topic, we are going to be talking about the housing crisis that is basically all over this area, right? Like here and also in the States. And
oh, it's in the States. It's been around for a long time too. Affordable housing has been an issue for a long period of time since I was in university, which is about 15 or 20 years ago. So it's, and it continues to get more difficult, not easier. That's what we'll talk about today.
Yeah, because we ourselves as a family with one income have had this like greatly affect us on like multiple different ways, because when you're trying to find affordable housing with two kids that have all the bells and whistles, so you want a backyard, you want to have central air, you want to be in a safe neighborhood, you want to have a clean house, you don't want to have like a dirty house or have like people that are going to be partying next door. You go to these places that are relatively in your price range and you show up there and there's like 20 people lined up out the door, and we each get like a 5 minute like walkthrough.
Well, okay, it depends on your actual price range too and your income bracket, because I think according to the government, the average income or the affordable income for a family of four, which is what we have,
yeah,
is about $45,000, which is insane, because any place we looked at within that price range that would deduct, you know, the rent from the overall income to buying the groceries and paying bills and you know, paying for the car and gas in the car to get to work, all the rest of it.
Yeah.
It was just completely unrealistic and it was insane. So realistically, I think the affordable living income, which is nuts, is about $60,000 for a family of four, really. That's the minimum, the bare minimum. And even then, that's struggling. It's just, it's so far out of whack in terms of the thinking, in terms of what you can afford or what the bare minimum is that you can afford for a certain type of living for your family size. So if you're making $100,000 a year, hey, awesome on you. Good for you. Hopefully you're living below your means, but that's the key. The key thing is to live below your means.
Yeah.
But living below your means in this case, if you're making $45,000 a year, means you're living in a shithole in some shitty basement with cockroaches and stuff, which is not cool, right? So you should be entitled to a certain level of respectable living, you know, at least that, entitled to that much.
Well, I find that it's not really, it's not even like a market for people to want to even rent. Like we, in the city that we're in right now, there's an empty hotel sitting there, not being used. And they, like, if they were to open that up in the winter months for people that are on the streets, we wouldn't be having people that are dying and freezing to death. I think my issue is how there seems to be a crisis and everyone seems to be aware of it, but they're like, we can't seem to come together and figure out like a way to get people off the streets, because there is no rent control. Like, so like a landlord can ask whatever he wants for his house, and there's no controlling it from the government's side.
So actually, to correct you, yeah, there is some control.
No, there isn't.
Control in terms of how much they can increase your rent. They could ask for what they want in terms of rent.
Yes, but I'm saying about when they are re-renting, right? We could go look at this house if we were moving into it now, and he could be like, I want $3,000 for it. I want $5,000. Like, there's no cap saying that, that's not realistic for...
But what they're asking for, the initial rent, is a different story than them increasing it year over year or, like, at the end of a lease, right? So the problem that I had in the past is that there was no rent control when it came to renting an apartment when I lived in Toronto for about 12 years. When I was going to school and whatnot, and this guy would just increasingly jack the rent by whatever he felt like. He could double the rent if he wanted to, because there was no control to stop him from doing so until the last like 5 years, I think, when the government stepped in and said, no, you can't jack someone's rent just because you feel like it. You could ask the initial rent, you can just you no. can determine, but you can't increase it.
No, I'm going to
exponentially.
I'm going to interrupt you because now, for new builds, mm-hmm. if a house is newly built now, mm-hmm. they can raise the rent however much they want every year.
Is that in just Ontario?
That is in Ontario.
Okay.
It's kind of a, it's a crappy situation, but nobody seems to want to, like, do anything about it.
But the hard thing is all these things are tied in together. So it's the housing market is tied in with the renting market. It's tied in with the building market. It's tied in with all the developers and all the rest of the condos. With inflation, it's all interconnected in some crazy way. And it's out of control because inflation is gone out the window. As far as I'm concerned, when it comes to the subprime lending market, for example.
Yeah, like,
I'm... Because I work in that market. I've worked with that market to some extent. And mm-hmm. it's just extortion. And because of those rates and because of the default rates on those high-risk, you know, mortgages or the developers, for example, they do the same thing. They'll sell out 50 of their units in a building that's has maybe 70 units in it. At a high risk lending rate with mortgages, and then they default, and then they have to compensate somehow. So that's yeah. where the prices go up for and renting, then, for buying.
And then on top of that, you have a place that you're paying like $2,100 for, and you have your hydro, you have your water, you have your food, you have your car insurance. Yeah. Like, you have to pay for all of that stuff, right? Mm-hmm. You have your car insurance, you have your renter's insurance, you have all of that stuff that add up to your bill at the end of every month. And it's just coincidentally that the majority of those like bills and payments all come out on the first.
Yeah.
Right. And so at the beginning of every month, your family of four and you have to, and you're working your tail off and you're just barely surviving.
It's a bit stressful. It's a bit nuts because it's like, you know, we were making between Britt and I, we were putting together about 70 grand a year at one point. And this is with the last place we were at, even this place to some extent. But the last place is that, like, the bills just kept piling up. Like, I would progress in my job and I'd make some more money, and Brittany would pick up other work to make more money as well. But still always seemed like we're just, like, just kind of getting by, you know? There's no means of putting aside $1,000 in savings.
No, and that's, I find it so amusing when I have,
and so
when we have family who come and they say like, oh, you should just start saving money. I'm like, oh, yeah, saving money?
Well, I mean, we live in a nice place and we've lived in nice places for sure. We don't live in like,
we don't live in
a
dumps.
Basement apartment with like leaky, basement walls and cockroaches.
But we have to make up. When you end up having such an expensive place that you have to live in, you end up not being able to do things. Like, you give up things. So you give up going to the beach. You give up going out for supper. You give up going to do different things because you literally can't afford to. Unless you live on credit. Don't you find that, like, people are like, yeah, I go out and I do this and I go on trips, but it's all on credit cards. If you were to take credit away tomorrow... people wouldn't be able to survive.
I've worked in credit for 20 years almost, and on the wrong side, dealing with collections and things like that, which is tough with credit cards from the U.S., from Canada as well. And so the life lesson learned from that job is that I guess we don't live on the credit card. We don't live on lines of credit. Even if we could, we would not, because it's a dirty, slippery slope that you can fall into very quickly, and you're buried in debt and you're just paying interest payments every month trying to keep ahead so you can take that next trip or do whatever. Mm-hmm. We do it on cash. If we don't have money to take that trip or, you know, buy that thing, then we don't get it typically. So, you know, it's a tough way to live sometimes, but I'd rather have a nicer domicile, a nicer home to live in
for
my kids and my wife, than to have like the biggest, fanciest car, or to have the biggest damn TV or the newest TV on the market kind of thing, or the electronics and things like this, and have food in the fridge versus those things as well, right? And that's the choice that we have to make these days in this market, in this current market, when it comes to housing, like affordability and things like that. So it's always a trade-off. Unless you're making 120,000 a year, then, you know, even then, you still have to make some choices, I guess, to some extent.
With this issue with the affordability, I find that it also causes, it has such like a trickle down into your relationship, to your mental health, to your mood. Because if you're stressed out about money, you're stressed out about bills, you're stressed about all of this different stuff, you just become a miserable human because you can't be happy. It seems like all you're doing all day, every day, is trying to make ends meet when it's like literally impossible to do so. Our car broke and it was going to cost us like $4,000. And it was just like, we couldn't afford it. We're like, nope, can't. So we decided to buy something else that was more reasonable and is able to be used right away versus having to have a vehicle that's just like a rock sitting in our driveway. But don't you find that having the stress of financial issues causes problems in like your relationships?
For sure it does. Absolutely it does. It's I think in the last podcast or the last two podcasts we did as a couple, we talked about a thing about perspective, right? But it's always a matter of, like, in that early stage process where you're trying to, like, build a family and find, like, a niche in, like, your profession or in life or something in your home, for example, it's a process. It's stressful. And, I mean, the last place we had to leave, we didn't want to leave voluntarily because, you know, the person wanted to sell the house.
Yeah, so, because they – and that's a whole other thing is you get people that are renting and you get slumlords. You get landlords that don't want to be responsible for their house. Like, fun fact for you, that if you are a renter and you're in Ontario, you are not responsible for shoveling your snow or cutting your grass. And if it is your responsibility and a landlord wants you to, they need to actually pay you or give you money off of your rent.
Some kind of compensation,
yeah. That, and that is, like, in the Landlord-Tenant Act.
Unless it's in your lease.
No, it doesn't even matter. That's how it's set up. So it's either they... I'm serious because I've had to call them, right? And a lot of people don't realize that. And a lot of landlords don't even know that. They just think, oh, I'm going to have a house and I'm going to rent it. I'm going to make money and that's it. They don't really get involved and look and see all the, like, different things. That if my furnace or whatever stops working in the middle of the night, that's their responsibility, right? And then that's where you get these places that are really cheap and they're garbage because the landlord just doesn't care. He just wants the money. Or you get places that are really, really, really expensive and they're gorgeous, but it's like then you aren't able to survive because you're stuck paying all of these bills, other people's bills, and you can't even save money to even want to buy a house.
And that's I think that's if anyone reads Forbes or reads the National Post and whatnot, they have, like, there's been multiple stories that have been put out for the last few years in terms of affordability of housing and, like, the possibility of this generation, Generation X or Generation Y or whoever, being able to buy a house is, like, next to nothing because the affordability factor has gone out the window because of inflation and the jacked up prices of cost of living. It's a bit scary. Will it correct itself? I don't know. Will it be like a 2008 crash of the housing market? Probably not.
Yeah, it makes me nervous.
It'll just keep climbing. It'll keep climbing because the subprime market is no longer an issue like it was in 2008 when I worked with the bank. At that time, when I saw it coming, and it came hard.
Well, just think about how much
inflation just seems to keep going. It just doesn't seem to want to stop. And so, I don't know. Salaries are not being proportionally increased with inflation, I think, is what it seems like. Because, you know, the cost of living is high. Never mind the cost of buying a home. Forget the cost of renting a home.
Yeah.
Or paying utilities and whatnot. It's insane. So,
for people that are currently on the streets, they were going to do like a shipping container type thing,
which is cool. Yeah.
And they had like this model that they kind of threw together just to give people an idea. But then you get the issue of a lot of these people that are on the streets, there's some stigma around what, like, about drug use, whatever, right? And the city was going to put them in a, like, put this little, like, city that they were going to create within a city. Yeah. And everybody that was in the neighborhood lost it. And they put up, they all like were writing like petitions and they got it shut down. And well, that
thinking though, I see both sides. That thinking though is like they're putting all the individuals that other people would think is a stigma on the society or on the streets and whatnot into one place, controlling them into a camp. And so the people who stopped it were looking at it as like
danger concentration to their kids. Camps. No, they were concerned about dirty needles because of all these safe injection sites. Now just go around and you go down and all these trails and you just find like dirty needles all over the place. And so they were concerned about that because it's like we're fixing some things, but we're not fixing the bigger issue. Right? I went down to the farmer's market today and I was walking down and as I came around a bend, there was, I'm not even kidding you, probably 8 people sitting up against the wall and they're looking for a hot, like, their sign, like, could you spare a coffee or some change or whatever? And it just, like, it broke my heart because it's, like, it was minus 14 this morning when I walked. And it's, like, we are all so comfortable in our bubbles of our, it's not my issue, it's not my problem, I'm not going to pay attention, that we don't, like, we don't even see them.
No, it's kind of a blinder thing, but it's kind of a different story as well. Like for our situation as well, like, we have a free vegetable market that opens up once every 2 weeks we can go to, we're allowed to get to. And the last time I went to that free vegetable market, and, you know, we're not busted broke, we're not homeless, but, you know, for people to get to, people can't afford to live.
No.
You know, on an average salary.
Well, it just seems like we cut our cable and we only have like Netflix, Prime and
Disney.
And the Disney thing, right? Like we've had to cut down so many different things. Like our internet currently is like only $41 and it's like for 110 gigabytes or whatever.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's before we had Rogers, we had cable and our bill from Rogers every month was almost like $200
or more. You got to pare it down, right? You got to look at your actual needs and wants and be able to knock off the wants and keep the needs, you know, and determine what are actual needs versus wants. So,
yeah. And also one thing that is an issue for people when they're trying to find housing is people not wanting you to have pets. Do you remember when we decided to move, we had 3 cats and I'm like,
it's not legal for them to say you can't have.
No, them, but it was, we were looking for a place. We were, because we co-sleep, I was like, we might even have to just take a 1-bedroom and we're going to have 2 kids under 2. I run a daycare and we're going to have 3 cats. Like that just seemed like that. Like if I was a landlord, that would just be like, I don't want them in my house, because all you ever see on all of these sites is people that don't take care of their pets make it difficult for people that do take care of their pets.
Well, landlords can also, they can't legally tell you to get rid of them. They can't choose to evict you because you have pets, but they can make your life a living hell.
Now, in the States, they can.
Yeah, okay. Not here. We're not in the States. But, yes, in Canada, they cannot evict you because you have them, but they can make your life a living hell. They can continuously, you know, lay on you in terms of, like, you know, property maintenance, this and that, and making sure. It's a difficult story, for sure, when it comes to renting. Renting is hard. Ownership is hard.
1.8 million Canadian households are spending more than 30% of their income on housing.
Yeah, at least that.
Yeah.
Say at least that.
And 30% is what housing experts suggest as a budget threshold for rent.
Threshold. We're pushing over about 40%, I think.
Yeah.
40, 45%, at least that.
And then there's 800,000 that spend 50% on their of their income on rent.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it, paying too much for rent has become the new normal, really. Yeah. I was looking it up because
overpaying for rent has become a transitional, like a progressive thing over the last 2 decades almost, I think. Because before I met you, I was renting on my own. I lived on my own for 15 years almost in Toronto, which just got worse and worse and worse and worse and worse when it came to the cost to benefit ratio. So you're paying like $500 for a room in a house, a nice house, mm-hmm. in 2001. And in 2005, for that same cash flow, you get nothing. You get a basement apartment in some dingy, water-soaked, you know, basement room in an apartment or a house in a storage room kind of mm-hmm. thing. So, and it's progressively gotten worse, and it gotten more expensive and less attainable for people. Like for students, for example, my God, which is what I was trying to rent. It's insane.
Well, and it's like here in Toronto and in other cities around us that have students, that seems to make it a lot harder, because you get people that will buy a house and they'll be like, oh, there's a living room and a dining room. I'm going to throw up some walls and put a door and make it a bedroom. But like, I honestly believe that there should be caps put on, whether they're new or old build. And that I think that landlords should have to have like a license. You should have to have like a license to be, and then you have to know what the laws are, what the rules are, what your responsibilities are as a landlord. Because I think far too many people are going and becoming landlords, like the ones that we had before. Yeah. And they literally, quote unquote, said, know what we were going to
do. No, they're not really educated, because a lot of people, those who are like first time landlords who are renting houses, I think, or rooms in a house, are a different story than someone who rents like a, you know, like a 10 unit sort of building.
Yeah.
They're different. Those guys are more savvy and sometimes more unscrupulous than the first-time renter, mm-hmm. the homeowner renter. So it's a gamble. You roll the dice. No matter what you do, when you rent, you roll the dice every single time you rent.
Yep, because you don't know what is... Because, like, the house we were in before, it looked nice. It was great. And then I fell through the back deck. And I'm not a big woman. Like, I'm 155 pounds. And I stepped on the, like, part of the deck, and all of a sudden I, like, fell through it. And I was just like, oh, my God.
Yo, the first question.
Literally,
Tom, am I too heavy? No, honey. The deck is rotten. It's garbage. It was garbage. It was pure garbage.
Yeah. And then the basement leaked.
Oh, my God.
And wow. All the doors wouldn't stay closed. And it's just like, but that's...
I spent hours and days fixing the place. But that's I didn't ask for compensation for any of that work.
But that's what we get for $19.50 a month.
Yeah.
Was me falling through a deck. Right? And that's where the problem is.
And that's an issue. That's still an issue. 19.50 a month, because that was, that place was about 50% of my income. Mind you, Brittany had some income as well. But still, 50% of my income went to the rent minimum. 52%, which was way too high for that. And that was all that was available. And that's the thing. The hard part is the availability of mm-hmm. actually good, like clean, safe, and affordable housing is ridiculous how not available it is.
And then there's the co-ops, right? Mm-hmm. And my issue with the co-op...
don't have any business being there, because they're getting like a free ride, and they make so much money.
Well, yeah.
Tons of money.
So what... So the co-ops here, we have like the people that have rent geared to income spots. And then you have a certain amount of spots that are like market,
market valued.
Yeah. And so, but the problem is that these people, they go in and they get into these units and they don't ever have to like leave. Right? So they get into a townhouse or whatever, and they can be in there for 20 years if they want, because again, they're a co-op, and each co-op is completely different. And I was completely shocked by that, because I'm like, so what you're saying is that if I was in a co-op and I got one of those market rent units, and I all of a sudden like struck it, and I was like, I was making like $130,000 a year, I could just still be living there? For that, like
nothing, yeah.
I would, but a part of me feels like I heard that you still have to like submit what you are making, but I can't see how, like, I would just be like, okay, well then why don't you move out?
I think the overall issue is that there's a lot of abuse of the system in terms of people finding loopholes, either landlords, owners, renters in co-op situations, and all the rest of it, that it's not a perfect system. It's not proportional to, it's not fair to the individuals that are trying to find proper housing, or legitimately affordable housing for themselves is extremely difficult when you have a lot of people that are trying to take advantage of the system, I think. Or, you know, landlords that are just trying to make it impossible for other people, or trying to profit on other people's misfortune.
Well, yeah, because a lot of the arguments that I see on social media is that people's mortgages and the taxes and the insurance and all that stuff, and that's why. And so, and I understand that. I get that, right? But unless you're going to own, like, multiple houses, you're not going to be able to get rich off of renting one house.
No, not one house. I think for a first-time renter, or sorry, first-time homeowner that is renting out that house, they may think that to some extent.
Yeah.
Somewhere. Our landlord currently does not think that. They're very cool. Previous landlords had been like...
duped. I think they got duped into thinking that they could just like rent out a place. And they were thoroughly not impressed when we called them. We're like, yeah, so the entire basement is leaking.
Yeah, or I call them like, hey, yeah, I fixed 15 things. I didn't charge you for it, but I just want to let you know that I had to fix these things. They're like, what?
Yeah, and I fell through your deck.
Yeah, and my wife fell through your deck.
And your...
Because it sucks.
Toilet roll thing fell out of the wall. Like, it was... It all looked nice, but again...
I know. It was... Yeah, visually, like, aesthetically, it looked all right. It was cool when you first walk in there, but then when you start to use it, and
that's what
functionally, it just got fucked up.
I think that landlords need to have a license, and their units need to be inspected yearly by the city. Because if they had to have a license, and the city had to inspect them mm-hmm. on a regular basis... You would see a dramatic change.
Well, it would make sense to have
shitty housing.
If as a renter to request, it would make sense and be fair to request like an actual safety inspection of the actual property. So, hey, okay, I want to know the electrical's good, the plumbing's good, structurally it's good,
but that's there's no that holes in walls. Because it's not legal, they'll be like, okay, never mind, I'll go with somebody else. Because there's nothing to back that.
No, I'm saying it would be ideal. It would be nice if you were mm-hmm. to rent a place and part of that rental agreement is that they have to present you with a safety certificate. Like when you buy a car, it's safe to put in the road kind of thing, right? Versus like a house that may just like light up in flames because they have old wiring in the house or some nonsense.
And to be fair, when I, like before we had kids, I really didn't care. I was like, I'll go rent a place,
you live in
whatever.
A car, in a trunk. Yeah.
But with the kids, I'm like... Does this place have mold in it? Like, that was the initial reason why we moved from our very first place, is because there was black mold in behind the bathtub, and our landlord just literally would come in and, like, re-caulk it with the wrong caulking.
Just splash it, yeah.
And it would, and within a day or two, the weight of the bathtub, because I told him, I said, you need to fill up the bathtub with water, because as soon as we have a bath and you fill it up with water and a human hops in it, it's going to fall apart. He didn't listen to me. And so
I was just seeing the top of the bathtub to the bottom of the tiles around the bathtub.
It was such a huge gap. And so
it wasn't very good, very savvy when it came to tools and whatnot.
Oh my God, no.
Kind of scared me a little bit.
No.
I'm like, dude.
Cutting a huge hole in the outside wall to get to the tap and drawing on it. I was just like, oh my God.
I had to fix so many of his problems. So many things he tried to fix. I'm like, okay, I'll fix it. It's fine. It's okay. So
yeah.
I have the tools.
And that's just it. It's like when you're renting, you end up probably most of the time, unless you have like stellar landlords, you have to end up doing a lot of things yourself.
Yeah.
As far as we're going to go with this? Or?
We could rant forever on this one, but yeah. Affordable housing. It's a never ending discussion.
Yeah, we could talk about this forever and ever. So yeah, that was a little bit more of a intense conversation rather than a juicy one, but... We'll be mixing it.
The juice is coming, don't you worry.
Yeah. So I hope you guys have a happy and wonderful Sunday night, because this is when you'll be listening to
and
it.
Thank you for listening.
Make sure that you slide over to Apple iTunes and rate and review.
And throw some comments in about what you would like us to discuss in future discussions.
Yes, because I have an email, mama.wifelifepodcast@gmail.com.
Trust me, whatever you're thinking about, like, for us to discuss, we've already had a discussion about it, or we've dealt with it already, so it's
yes.
cool.
We have some input. We are an open book. We are just like you guys. So we are not celebrity fake people. We are real, and we will tell you all of the things.
Bring the noise.
I hope you guys have a wonderful evening. Talk to you guys later.
We'll give it to you dirty. Bye.
Bye.